This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer. It's all about living your best life.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
You're listening to the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast, brought to you by Dubai Eye 103.8. Great to have you with us, and this is your chance to catch up on real life stories, hear inspirational people, and get the advice that you need. It is March, that means it's the month of reading. But what if your kid would rather be gaming or kicking about a football than enjoying a book? We were joined by Natalie Clayton. She's a teacher and a coach to help you with your reluctant readers. And when it comes to getting out and about, it's all about that balance. We were joined by Simona from Kids App, that's Kids with a Q, to share some of her best bargains around town, some of the places that you could be enjoying in the great outdoors in this glorious weather. And unfortunately, during the course of the pandemic, we have seen a spike in household injuries in young ones, whether that's through spending more time at home or us being perhaps a bit more distracted. How can you childproof your home? We were joined by Safe Hands to tell us some of the hidden dangers that you might not think of and the one way you can certainly find out what's happening at your kids' level. Plus, as we are spending more time online, and certainly our children are too because of distance learning, what about Zoom fatigue? We've been suffering from it, but what about our young people, our teens, our kids? How can we help them deal with anxiety about being on camera and having lessons conducted there? We brought in the experts to answer your questions. We
are family. Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We do talk education, parenting, and this is perfectly dovetailing as we ask, is your child a reluctant reader? March is, of course, Reading Month. Thursday, mark it in your diaries, World Book Day. Expect an influx of many photos on Instagram of children dressed up as Paddington Bear. But if your child is a reluctant reader, have you tried everything to get them engaged in a book, but to no avail? Is it taking them time to learn to read after months of distance learning? We're getting some top tips now from the Prep Curriculum Lead for English at Brighton College, Dubai. Natalie Clayton's with us. She's also consultant trainer for Ruth Miskin's Read, Write, Ink programmes. Natalie, how are you?
I'm good, thank you, Helen. How are you?
I am well. What's your
You're amazing.
What's your reason to be cheerful today? What's got you smiling?
Well, I teach early years. So these little children that are 5 years old, 4 years old, 5 years old, and they bring us joy every day. And the stories that they tell us, they're amazing. So, yeah, you can't help but smile when you work in early years.
Being back in the classroom.
That's so good.
And, well, yeah, because I thought a lot about teachers of early years during the kind of distance learning that we were doing last year. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing to beat the interaction, you know, being with each other and having fun together. And my kids are exactly that age. They're 4 and 6. Mm-hmm. And they come home just full of stories. It was my daughter's birthday the other day, and she invited her teacher to come to her play date party yesterday. It's the sweetest thing. But what's amazing about that age group is how much they can learn, and how, especially when they're in school. My daughter will now, you know, driving down the road, and she'll point out signs and read them to me. I'm like, what? How did this happen? When did this happen? And it is just the most amazing thing, actually, as a parent, to see that click in a child. And I think conversely, it can be really frustrating when that doesn't kind of come together. You know, your mission is to teach every child to read and write and keep them reading, you know, with no exceptions. Where did your love of reading come from, Natalie?
I think as a child, I always loved reading. It was always a passion. And for me, learning to read, there were no problems with learning to read for me. I always loved reading. But I had my brother, he's different, and his learning to read journey was a little bit longer than mine. And I always remember looking at him thinking, why is he finding it difficult to read? And then my passion sort of started from there then, really. I mean, obviously he had brilliant teachers, and we had a supportive family, so he got there. But I often think about those children that maybe do slip through the net. And I did meet many, many children in my time as a consultant trainer, many children over my years of teaching that, you know, we've had to get in there and we've had to teach them as quickly and as easily as possible to read. And that's our mission. Every child deserves to learn how to read as quickly and as easily as possible.
I think that's exactly right. And as you say, there are children who are in a really privileged position where they've got parents who read themselves, and it's, you know, it's a priority for them. They're willing to take the time, whether that is through distance learning or in their own time to, well, I'm in the phonics trenches, lots of you know, all that stuff. But there are, unfortunately, for various reasons, kids that aren't supported, which is perhaps where this comes in. So can you tell us about the Read, Write, Ink, phonics programme? What is it all about?
Yeah, I can. So there are many programmes, and here at Brighton College, we use the Read, Write, Ink programme by Ruth Miskin. It's amazing. So what we do is we teach our children to read those sounds that you said you're very much in the phonics trenches, which is exactly what we do. So
goat on a boat. Children,
yes, you know it, you know it. So we do, we teach our children to read those sounds because the English language system is very complex, and we have, for those of you that are not that familiar with phonics, we have 26 letters in the alphabet, and we have 44 speech sounds in the English language system. Are you keeping up there? Mm-hmm. And for those 44 speech sounds, we've got over 180 ways of writing those sounds. So it's really complex for our children. So we've got to teach them really, really well. So with Read, Write, Ink, what we do is we teach, first of all, obviously we teach the sounds in the environment, get children really used to hearing sounds around them. And then we teach our children to hear the sound, to say the sound. Because what we've got to remember really, Helen, is that as human beings, we're not hardwired for reading. We're hardwired for speaking and listening, to see and to hear, but we're not hardwired for reading. Reading is something that's fairly new, actually. It's something that human beings have made up to communicate. So those squiggles on the page are new, you know, they have to be taught. Mm-hmm. Phonics is a code. Basically, it's a code, and we have to teach it, and we have to teach it really, really well. So we teach our children to hear the sounds, to say the sounds, and then once the children can read those sounds, we teach them how to read those sounds within words. So I'm going to say something that might be familiar to many of your listeners now, is we get to a stage where the children can read words like at, mat. And there are many children at this stage now in class this morning, in many, many schools, will say at, granddad. You know, they're learning to blend those words. And that's what we'll teach them, how to blend those words, to blend those sounds to read words. And we do that in that cumulative nature, so it breeds on success. And of course, we want the children to write those words then as well.
Can I ask something? When should we be starting to do things like, and I don't know if you like flashcards or if it's just a case of reading together, but what age do you encourage that from?
Well, I would say from FS1 and start introducing the cards, but obviously, you're familiar with the Read, Write, Ink program. So on the front of every Read, Write, Ink sound, there's a picture. So, for example, there's a dinosaur or a mazy mountain. And that's called a mnemonic, and it hooks the children in. So if it says mountain, start talking about the mountain and the dinosaur and the apple. Talk about the pictures and then talk about the sound, you know, behind the picture, kind of, you know, link them in. So mountain. The dinosaur. So as you're opening your fridge, you can go, I'm going to the fridge to get some milk. So you can introduce it that way, so they can just hear that sound and start introducing the flashcards just organically. Just make it really organic, and you can do it from 2.5. You know, you can do it whenever you feel like it's just a nice conversation, like, oh, look, this is a dinosaur. But We love it when our parents support us. And of course, here we train our parents, we talk to our parents, we discuss it with our parents so they know what they're doing. And we're talking about the sounds now, Helen, and we're asking parents to not really teach letter names yet. So we don't really teach the L, M, N just yet, because of course we don't need those letter names for reading. We need them for spelling, but we don't need them for reading.
Number of questions coming in. Lee says, I feel like the books they're offering my daughter are too easy for her. She's in year two. Could this program help? How does it work with schools? And what could this listener do about making sure his daughter's getting, you know, an appropriate level of reading?
Well, this is music to my ears, actually. It's lovely to hear that children are thriving and loving reading. So for me, Read Write Ink programme is a learning to read programme, and there are two phases in a child's reading journey. There's learning to read, where we teach our children to be accurate readers and fluent readers, and that's time limited. And ideally, we want children to be at this sort of stage at 6, 7 years old. And it sounds to me like your daughter is very much at this stage where she has learnt to read. She's an accurate reader. She's flying through the book, which is what we love. And now she's on the next stage of her journey, which is reading to learn, which of course is lifelong. And that's what we do as adults. We're always reading to learn. So I would, I know the school are giving you books, but actually take pleasure in all the books that are, you know, around you, in the library books that school provides, in any books, go to the shop and have a look through books together. She's cracked the code. So enjoy it now. You know, this is your time to shine. You can enjoy reading and the pleasures that reading brings.
Can I ask you to put your teacher hat on for a minute? If a parent comes to you and they say these, and I'm certainly not talking about Leahy messaging, saying, these books are too easy, but you disagree, you know, you think their child might be at a slightly different stage. How do you navigate that, Natalie?
Well, we talk about that a lot, because there are, every time a child reads a learning to read book, we talk about three reads. So the first read, we always want the children to be accurate, and that's my job as a class teacher. Can I make sure that every single child in my class can read this book accurately? The second read is about building up that fluency, because we know it's only when children are fluent that their brain can start to comprehend. So, I mean, we know that unless you're reading over 150 words per minute, comprehension doesn't really kick in. Mm-hmm. So we know children learning to read are reading around 60 words per minute. So they're not really absorbing everything they're reading anyway. So we need to really work on that in class. So the second read is all about building up that fluency. And then, of course, the third read is about children having that really accurate mental model. They know exactly what's going on in that story. We've taught them. To be honest, at the early stages of reading, we're doing the comprehension on their behalf, because at that stage, their brains are so busy trying to work out what the word says, they're not really working out what the word means. So I always say to parents, if your child comes home with a storybook, they've come home with it after their third read, and if they read it fluently and beautifully, it's brilliant, because it means I've done my job. I've done my job. And they're coming home to you to celebrate a book. It should always be, I've got my book out of my bag, Mummy. Oh, Daddy, look what I can read.
And that's what we miss with library during distance learning. Yeah. I really miss their excitement of going in and choosing something. It's always really interesting to see what they gravitate towards as well, what resonates. And Lena's been in touch saying, my daughter is 7 and she gets intimidated by chapter books and only enjoys reading picture books or comic books. How can she start getting used to reading more books without pictures? Such a great question from Lena. I know it's it's a really common one, I think. It feels like a big move in some ways. What advice would you give to any parents experiencing similar?
It takes a lot of stamina, don't you think? It takes a lot of stamina to read a chapter book. You really need to have all that energy to read it. And I think, first of all, is how fluent is she? Do you think she's reading, like, I don't want to say get a timer out and timer for 60, you know, how many words is she reading per minute? But actually, it's a really useful resource that we do in school. So we actually do time our children to see how many words they can read a minute. And we know if they're reading fewer than 80 words, then we know that actually that they've not quite got the stamina, and we need to build up their fluency. My advice was, there is amazing, we call them graphic novels, picture books, graphic novels. They're amazing graphic novels for lots of ages out there. And just slowly hook her in. And I would suggest perhaps sharing the chapter. So tonight, let's read the first chapter together. Let's enjoy it. I'll read a little bit and then you read a little bit. And then, of course, when you're reading it, narrate. So rather than asking her questions like, why do you think that's happened? Why do you think this? Actually narrate, how do you think as a reader? How do you infer? That means, like, how do you get a grip of what's going on in the story? So you say things, we call it thinking out loud. We tell it. We think out loud and we go, do you know, I didn't expect that to happen to that character. I'm so surprised. Are you surprised? Show, not tell.
I love that. Natalie, run out of time. We have run out of questions, unfortunately, so I wish we did have a bit more time. But for anyone who wants to find out more about the Read, Write, Ink programme, what's the best way of getting in touch and getting involved?
Yeah, I think amazing support for parents on the Ruth Miskin website. Ruth Miskin has written some brilliant blogs, and there's a full team there that can help as well. So I think the best place to go is to the Ruth Miskin website.
Brilliant. Natalie, thank you so much for your time. Have a wonderful day ahead. Natalie Clayton there, the Prep Curriculum Lead for English at Brighton College, Dubai.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
The sun is out, the sky is blue, it is time to get outside with the kids. So where are some of your favourite spots? To share some of the best and how to save a few dirhams too. Delighted to be joined by Simona. She's the co-founder of Kids Mobile App. That's Kids with a Q. Simona, before we start talking through your top pick from the app and some of the best deals, I need to give you a sincere thank you.
Oh, that sounds good. Hello.
Well, I saw on Kids recently some of the best skating spots. So places to go for skateboarding, scooting, basically things on wheels. And on your recommendation, yesterday, and you know, I'm going to get so many messages of people going, I cannot believe you're giving away our favourite hidden gem. We went to the Block at D3 after seeing videos of just scooting around and patches of fresh grass and climbing blocks and being next to the creek. And we absolutely loved it. It was just brilliant.
Honestly,
it was fantastic. Me being a super keno slash my kids getting up before the sun rises, we got there at about 8:30, got breakfast on the way. There was a woman, and I have to say, she is my new queen. I got a McDonald's breakfast picnic for her and her family. I was like, yes, that's what you do. But yeah, it was brilliant. Perfect. Lovely skate park, a few people playing basketball, but really quiet and totally free, completely free. Mm. So it just goes to show that, yeah, when you follow the right people, you can get some great ideas for keeping the families occupied. So thank you for that.
Oh, I'm delighted. I love it there too. It's brilliant.
It was fab. So that's the Block at D3, which I'm going to claim as my own. That's my top pick at the moment. What is popular on Kids Mobile App right now where people can go and get some deals and also some inspiration too if we're talking about getting outside? And this isn't just for kids. I'd say some of these would definitely be relevant to grown-ups as well.
Okay, well, brilliant. Let's start with, since you started with free and outdoors, I'll continue with free and outdoors to start with. So you love the Block. I think it's brilliant. Another place that I went to and discovered recently, which has got lots of free components to it, is Town Square out on Al Qudra. And there's two places there in Al Qudra or in Town Square. One of them has got sort of a trampoline park, which is paying, but it's got a huge skate park, which is not paying. And there's a wave park and there's a few other things there. And then there's another place also in Town Square, which is by a lovely cafe called Kaya, I think. And there's a very large covered park for kids to play in, maybe the younger kids on a climbing frame and so on.
Brilliant.
So that's a good place to go and explore.
A bit of a freebie. We love a bit of a freebie. And one thing I'm really keen to try, and I did see it on Kids as well, is the kayaking in the mangroves. This looks amazing. This is kind of Sharjah way, am I right in thinking?
Yeah, so it's actually Amman. It's just past Sharjah. It's called Quest for Adventure, and it's a 2 to 4 hour, I'd say it's probably about 2 to 2.5 hours, where you're actually out on the mangroves. It's a guided tour, and it's really nice because it's in nature, and you can see flamingos, and you can see different flora and fauna, and it's just a really fun, active thing to do with your family. So I also highly recommend that.
Okay, that's going on my to-do list. Now, some places I have been to and have gone back again and again and again, and that includes Dubai Garden Glow. There's something about it that I just love. Dinosaurs first, then it gets dark, quick trip around the Garden Glow. Do you have any good deals on there right now?
Yes, the Garden Glow, I love Garden Glow as well. It's one of those things that we try and explain to someone who's never seen it or visiting
Canada. It's bizarre, doesn't it?
But it's a brilliant, I find it a magical place to go with young kids and even adults because it's just different. So yeah, you can find, you can buy tickets for that, for the entrance and the dino park, 50 dirhams. And I think they've got a new part, which is called sort of the magic part, and it's 3D art and illusion. Mm-hmm. For the total package, if you buy the dino park, the entrance, and for the magic park, it's 80 dirhams.
Brilliant.
That's a nice one for the family.
Aventura is often on kids' app. Can you tell us a little bit about Aventura and if you can save us some money?
Absolutely. I think Aventura is amazing. It's one of those places where you take family, because things for adults, things for even young kids. So it's basically an outdoor park in the woods, in complete nature, and they've got nature trails, and they've got zip lines, and you've done it yourself. You'll probably be able to talk about it.
I did this the kind of kids bit with the kids, but to be honest, don't tell them. I had more fun without them when we'd had a date night on the zip lines. It was brilliant, and I think that's exactly right. You just feel like you're so out of the city, even though it's a Musher Park and it's actually not that far at all. Another place I wanted to flag actually was the Camel Farm, and it's a great time to go. What can people expect when they get there, Simona?
Yeah, so the Camel Farm is a good one. You do have to book ahead of time, so definitely make sure you phone and you can book through us, but you have to phone and book it, because it is very COVID conscious, and so they're making sure that it's small groups and they make sure it's socially distanced, etc. But you can go and visit the farm, learn about the camels, and you know, you can actually ride them. I think there's an additional surcharge for riding them, and you can feed the goats, sheep, chicken and rabbits, and just learn about these amazing animals that are so part of the, you know, the UAE culture.
Speaking of UAE culture, there's a tour that I think is well worth talking about. And this is a great one for if and when we get visitors in town, or if you're new to Dubai, you just want to fall in love with the UAE all over again. It's called Unveil Arabia. What is it all about? And can you really visit all of the Emirates? It seems like an amazing day out.
Yeah, so this one is really cool. It's basically, I think they tried to cross 5 Emirates. Now, don't hold me to that, but that's what I understand. And basically, you know, you visit the Hajar Mountains, you see wadis, there's many stops along the way. There's some mini hikes and some scavenger hunts that they build in for, I guess, for the kids or even the adults, I'm not sure. And basically what I like about it is that you go in your own car, obviously if you've got one, it's not they can arrange it, but there's an additional charge. And then, you know, you're in your own bubble of your car and you're being guided through a guide, and they stop and they tell you about the different things that you're seeing. So it's a really good way to learn about the UAE. I think that's a good one to try. I'm definitely going to try that one. I haven't done it yet.
And good one with social distancing. I mean, to be honest, I'm just all about outside right now. You know, even with the family, just, you know, sitting outside at a cafe or being in the parks as much as possible, because the weather is gorgeous and we've got plenty of time for indoor things as the weather heats up. So why not enjoy? We've got time for one more, Simona. What would you like to highlight?
Oh, wow, that's so difficult.
Sorry.
I think I'll talk about the farm private tour, and that's where you can go and visit a farm in Al Qanijwe and learn about organic sustainable produce. And I understand you can harvest some of the products as well.
Oh,
so it's, again, a really good way to teach your kids about sustainable organic food and how to you know, look into that and learn about that.
Brilliant. Simona, thank you so, so much for your time and inspiration. I hope you had your notebooks ready. But if you didn't, you can go to the Kids mobile app. That's QIDZ. Have a look. Save yourself some dirhams too.
We are family. Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Talking parenting and keeping those little ones safe. Child-proofing your home. This has been increasingly difficult for parents with very small kids who've been staying at home, working from home, distance learning from home. So joining us to give us some advice is Rebecca Smith. She heads up Safe Hands. They do safety and first aid training for parents and carers of children and more. And they're all registered nurses. So they've got a wealth of experience. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, Helen. How are you?
I am well. Before we start talking childproofing, what's your reason to be cheerful today? What's making you smile?
I'm on the radio with you.
Yay!
That's my reason to be cheerful.
I'm glad you're cheerful and not nervous, because there's nothing to be nervous about.
No, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Always
and
a pleasure.
And you. And it's something, to be honest, I feel like we know the scary high percentage of household accidents that contribute to children going into hospital, going to the emergency room. And as I said, we're all spending more and more time at home. You must be receiving a lot of questions about childproofing during a pandemic. You know, it's a huge challenge. What kind of things have you noticed over the course of the last year, Rebecca?
I think just in general, we've noticed sort of looking at the research and, you know, articles and studies that are published in the BMJ and beyond, that, you know, the statistics and the rates of childhood injuries at home is increasing. Usually in the UAE, we see similar trends around summer. It heats up, people want to escape the heat, they spend more time indoors. And we see a lot of accidents taking place at home for that reason. But since lockdown last year, there's just been this huge spike in the UAE and worldwide. So, yeah, lots of questions about childproofing your home, but lots of questions about how to deal with the injuries that occur as well. So, we've been busy.
I actually thought of you yesterday. No, day before yesterday, because my kids, I always say, please just stay out of my room when I'm getting ready. Just please, because it's just super annoying and I can't get anything done and they want to put my makeup on. And then my eldest grabbed my hair tongs on Saturday over the weekend and just got not a bad burn by any means, but got a burn on kind of the pad of her hand.
Yeah.
It's like, well, Phoebe, you know, with respect, I told you not to come in. There's a light on it. You know, you've learned your lesson now. But the drama, oh, my days. She's there with like a bandage all up her arm and we're putting, you know, aloe vera on it. We're putting honey on it the next time. And I was thinking, because I've done safe hands training and I was like, okay, right, let's think about this. We want to cool it down, but not use ice. But the funny thing is, I think we all have this moment of complete freezing. We just go, I can't remember what to do. And I think the best thing is obviously try and avoid these situations in the first place. And you've got a really systematic approach to childproofing. Can you talk us through that, Rebecca?
Yeah, sure. So when we look at childproofing in any home, it's to firstly look at the environment from a child's perspective. That's the number one tip I can give. So basically getting down to your child's level and looking at all the dangers that, you know, could be present in each and every room. So whether that's something they could pull on, you know, an exposed wire, a piece of furniture that could tipple over, something loose that they could put in their mouth, just surveying the space from your child's perspective is the number one tip. Going room by room, we have different sort of dangers that can occur based on the rooms and the things in that room. So then it's going through each of the rooms, surveying them and looking at the potential dangers and tools you can use to make that safer.
And when you say that, I really like the idea of, I mean, it'd be bad on the knees, of, you know, crouching down or crawling around to a baby or toddler or even, you know, my 6-year-old's height, because it's a completely different perspective. You know, we're thinking about, you know, bins, cleaning products, sharp items. You know, we've seen packaging confusing kids, them thinking bleach is milk, you know, because of a blue label or whatever that might look like. And then we think about outdoor spaces as well. It is really overwhelming for a parent. And to be honest, it creeps up on you. One minute they're literally in your arms, the next minute they are pulling things down.
Yeah.
So I really like that kind of think like a child, you know, keep their milestones and their capabilities in mind. And yeah, a big part of them educating, you know, being educated at home is kind of teaching them as well as early as possible about some of the potential dangers and why they're dangerous. But sometimes, I hate to say it, but my daughter will not touch the hair tongs again. But how can we really drive home potential dangers without an accident to actually illustrate it?
So, education's key when it comes to trying to prevent these accidents and injuries happening, for sure. And they say from 1 year old sort of onwards that, you know, children will look at what their parents and older siblings are doing and mimic that behavior. So making sure that older siblings know the dangers that can present themselves in each area of the house. And like I say, making sure that younger children are taught as early as possible. Not only teaching them the dangers, though, helping them understand why it's important not to do something or not to touch something is key. So making sure that if you're talking about the hair straighteners, okay, and not touching them, okay, why is that important? Well, it could really hurt you. You know, you could end up getting a really, really bad burn. So the why is critical in education, and just making sure that you're practicing what you preach. They're going to be looking at your behaviors and mimicking it, and making sure that older siblings, you know this sort of stuff inside out, so that they can pass on that information as well.
Well said indeed. So Rebecca, I wanted to ask you about those training courses that you offer. And you're very keen in emphasising it's not just for parents, it's for nannies and helpers as well. Why do you feel like that's so key?
I think, firstly, I know I'm biased, but I have the opinion that anyone and everyone should have at least a basic knowledge of first aid. You know, you never know when you're going to use it. And it's one of those skills that you kind of hope to never have to use, but they can literally be life-saving in an emergency. So parents, home help and nannies, you know, corporate people in the office environment, I believe that everyone should be trained, but in particularly home help and nannies, you know, they spend a lot of time at home with the little ones. And like we've discussed already, the home is where a lot of these accidents and injuries occur. So it's key that, you know, the person that's going to be there in that instant, in that emergency, knows how to deal with it.
Couldn't agree more. It's just that confidence. And as I said, yeah, when my daughter burnt her hand, I did completely freeze. The adrenaline kicked in. I was like, okay, now I actually do know this. It's there.
Yeah.
You know, I did have a little Google about half an hour later just to make sure that I had done it correctly. But it's a confidence booster. And as you say, corporates, great for the resume as well. Now, when it comes to childproofing, there are some little gadget products that are really helpful. You know, the plugins for your sockets, you know, corners to, you know, soften those. That was honestly, and this is a terrible thing to say, but that age of kind of 18 months is probably my least favourite of children, because mine just didn't listen. They were at a height where they would just tear around, and they were at a height of tables and corners of chairs, and I would spend my whole time just cringing, going, oh, it's just a matter of time before so there's a big, great big whack.
Yeah.
So what about where to go for some of these products? Just can go and get everything you need, have a blitz at home, get down to your child's height and tackle some of those trouble spots.
Yeah, so there's a few places that you can go to here in Dubai, and there's a lot of online options, which is good for the current climate as well.
Definitely.
So there's a company called Be Safe that's based in Times Square Mall. Some people may have heard of it. And actually, if you Google them, they've got a very similar logo to ours at Safe Hands. I promise I'm not affiliated, it's not a plug. They're just great when it comes to all things sort of safety in the home and childproofing. And I think they have a website as well. But places like IKEA, Desert Car, Amazon, and the parental sites like Mum's World and Spree also have a lot of these gadgets that you can order as well.
We had a message from Celine, and I'm wondering if you can help. She's saying, 2.5-year-old son swallowed the pit of a prune, didn't choke, was fine, it's been 2 days. Will it just come out the other end?
Yeah, it's a good question. It will. It should be fine. Yeah, it can take sort of 2 to 3 days for that to pass. But yeah, as long as it was ingested we didn't have a choking situation, it should be fine. And yeah, that should be passing very shortly.
Oh,
yeah.
It's all glamour and parenting. Speaking of choking, for parents that have got little ones and they're thinking about weaning, or for, you know, the older ones that might be a bit kind of quick with their food, are you able to offer up just a few quick lessons in dealing with choking in little ones, be that from babies up to kids?
Yeah, sure. So choking is actually, when it comes to first aid, one of the skills we hear being practiced most often. So really important that you know how to recognize and deal with a choking incident should it occur. The recognition of a choking incident is really, really important, because obviously really little ones, you know, infants and babies aren't going to be able to state the fact that they're choking to you. So firstly, looking at the signs and symptoms of a serious blockage. We have two types of blockages in choking. We have a mild and a severe. A mild blockage is that sort of instant where a child or an adult may eat or drink something too fast, get that big coughing fit, they go red in the face, it's kind of dramatic. But if the child or the adult is able to cough, that means that air can pass out of the mouth. That also means that air can be inhaled. So all we want to do in that instant is pat the person on the back, encourage coughing if they're old enough to do so, and that blockage will most likely clear itself. When we've got a severe blockage, that will mean we've got a full covering of the airway with an object. And that's the sort of instance where we have to jump in and intervene quite quickly. In really little ones who may not be able to state the choking situation to you, we're going to have to look out for the fixed stare that children sometimes have when they're choking, an open mouth, maybe watering or tearing eyes, and a potential flushed appearance in their cheeks. So basically, facially, it can look like the child is crying, but the key difference is that there'll be no sound, little to no sound coming out of the mouth at all. In an older child, they may be trying to cough or trying to communicate with you, but again, that will be ineffective, little to no sound coming out of the mouth because of the blockage. In a baby, so in an infant, which we categorize as anyone under the age of one, what you want to do is tip baby. So they're in a tilted position with the head towards the floor. You can do this quite easily by laying baby down your thigh and making sure the head is positioned on the end of your knee with the stomach touching your thigh. You then want to deliver 5 hard, sharp back slaps with the heel of your hand between baby's shoulder blades. Most often, this is enough to dislodge an object. But if baby is still choking after those 5 back blows, what we do is turn them over, check the mouth quickly for any sign of the object, and give 5 chest thrusts if baby was still choking, which is when you place 2 fingers right in the center of baby's chest on the sternum and push down by about 1.5 inches. You then continue that until the object is dislodged, hopefully. In an older child or an adult, we want to use something called the Heimlich maneuver. Okay, if you've ever seen the film Mrs. Doubtfire.
Of course I have. It's a favorite.
Yeah. it's a good way to sort of reference it. It was a key scene in that film. But it's when you position yourself behind a choking person, you wrap your arms around them, and you deliver what we call abdominal thrust to try and clear the blockage. In a child under 5 years old, so between 1 and 5, you want to attempt 5 initial back blows before moving on to Heimlich. Again, using the heel of your hand straight in between the shoulder blades to do this. If that does not work to dislodge the object, you move on to Heimlich. Anyone above 5 years, you can go straight in with this technique. It basically involves placing the fist of your hand between the belly button and the spot of the sternum where the rib cage joins together. Mm. You then put your other arm around, grab that fist with the other hand, and use an inwards and upwards motion very sharply to try and dislodge the object. I hope that all made sense. I gave
it
you
totally
lots of
did. It's so,
there.
So valuable. Honestly, it just goes to show that we all need to have this in our arsenal. So thank you so much, Rebecca Smith there from Safe Hands. Have a safe and healthy day. Always a pleasure, Becca. Take care. We
are family. Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
A new study by Stanford University says Zoom fatigue causes greater stress than meeting in real life because of non-verbal overload, endless video calls. And while if us adults are tired of these Zoom calls and feel awkward and uncomfortable and self-conscious being in front of the webcam, imagine how our kids feel. So many students are still distance learning or opting for that option. Going in front of the webcam, facing the whole class virtually, it's not always a pleasant experience for many of them. And according to Priory Wellbeing Centre, there are children and adolescents whose anxiety levels are up, and webcams can exacerbate this. Delighted to be joined this afternoon by Clinical Director and Counselling Psychologist at Priory. It's Tanya Dharamshi. Here to explain this and give a few tips for us on how to overcome this with our children when the camera is on. Tanya, thank you so much. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I am fine. It does give me kind of, I shouldn't say it, I'm over the Zooms as well, I have to say. I am.
Yeah.
Got one scheduled tomorrow morning. I'm like, yeah. Great.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's real. It's pretty strange given that a year ago I'd never heard of Zooming, and now we use it. Oh, I'll Zoom you. We're Zooming. You know, it's now a verb. You know, in this document that you've sent over to us, apparently some children feel like doing a Zoom call or a Zoom class is a form of torture, which is just so awful to hear. And I just wondered from, you know, patients, clients, families that you've got coming in, you know, what changes are you seeing in children that do suffer from anxiety as a result of webcam and this style of learning?
So, I mean, children will struggle with anxiety. Teen social anxiety is quite common. And this is even pre-COVID, before we were in front of Zoom. You know, how are we going to be perceived? How are people looking at us? Well, you know, what are we wearing? Why are we dressing? You know, all those sorts of things. Add that on to Zoom, where we're sitting in front of a screen. Part of behavior, part of communication, sorry, is watching people's behavior, watching people's, the nonverbal cues. And that's really hard for us to pick up on a Zoom call. So that adds to that anxiety. You know, sitting in front of a screen, I don't think we really realize just how exhausting that can be. Mm-hmm. Sitting in a chair, and, you know, having to sit still for that period of time, watching yourself on screen and then watching other people potentially see you on screen, you know. So I think that's quite exhausting as well, and can lead to a lot of anxiety when that comes up. It is exhausting, like you said.
It is. I'm always fixing my hair, and then I watch the video back. I'm like, stop fixing your hair. But it's funny you mention about kind of that teen. I remember even being in English class, and we had to, you know, read a paragraph per person, and me looking ahead to see what paragraph I was going to have to read, and my heart just pounding. Hated it. Yeah. Ironic that I do what I do now, given my fear of public speaking. But I really do sympathise with kids and teens as well. So how can we help them overcome this? Presumably, understanding, you know, putting ourselves in their shoes must be a big part of it.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's unfortunate that we are in this situation, and that, you know, my heart goes out to the teachers as well, because along with this comes with a lot of creativity. Part of how they assess that children are actually paying attention, or that the students are paying attention to the learning, is actually seeing them on the screen. But yet we actually need to be able to give some sort of leeway to the students to say, I need to shut the screen down a little bit. But we have to come up with some creative ways of how we can then still assess the social interaction, or the level of interaction with the teacher as well. So I think that some of it will be corresponding and communicating with the school, so that you are able to say, let's try and shut the screen down at this time. Let's gradually build up to it. You know, let's try and minimize the amount of time that we're sitting in front of the screen. If we can do a little bit on, a little bit off, you know, and build our students' confidence in front of the screen a little bit more as well. Moving around a little bit, getting them to stand and actually be a bit more physically active is also quite helpful, rather than just sitting and staring into the screen.
I think it's really hard as well for parents to see your child actually being quite uncomfortable during these situations as well.
Absolutely.
That can be a real challenge. But one thing we found, and it's still kind of a bit of a hangover from distance learning, is my daughter would feel really self-conscious about putting her hand up, or even just fear of getting things wrong. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. You almost feel like, I mean, if you imagine when we were back in school and we had to put our hand up, or when you were just talking about having to read this paragraph out loud, you know, your heart is jumping and you're hoping and praying that you don't twist up the words, or you say it with the right emphasis that you're supposed to be saying with, and that you're reading it correctly and smoothly. Now imagine that on a Zoom cam where everyone's watching you. You know, that anxiety is even more, and watching your face and watching, does your hair, you know, they're looking at your hair, they're looking at your voice, they're looking at your face, they're looking at the expressions. They're also looking at what's behind you as well, checking out your home environment, and, you know, and then hoping to say, no, the dog doesn't bark, or, you know, the doorbell doesn't ring, or something else, which are real adult concerns as well for those of us that are Zooming as well, right? Mm-hmm. Now imagine your younger child.
I did the show from home, we got delivery, and my dogs went ballistic.
Oh,
so the whole of Dubai heard my Zoom realities.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Tania Dharamshi, Clinical Director and Counselling Psychologist at Priory Wellbeing Centre, is live on the line talking about overcoming those Zoom problems with our kids, the anxiety feeling self-conscious, the heart racing, and lack of confidence, I think, is something that everyone's experienced at some point of view. But as you say on Zoom, Tanya, we can all feel very much on show. How can we help boost confidence in our kids, their self-esteem? When is the time to give praise, and how do we do it?
So I think, you know, the first thing is always validating what they're feeling. The worst thing we can do is minimize it or to negate it. So always acknowledge that, you know, what they're feeling is very natural, very normal, and also to also normalize it with other students who are probably going through this as well. You're not on your own. This is not just a singular incident. This is something that a lot of students are experiencing and going through as well. You know, halfway through, if the student is in the lesson and you can see that they're feeling a bit uncomfortable, resist the urge to jump in and say, it's okay, sir, sit up straight or something like that. You know, just resist the urge. Let them kind of be doing what it is that they're doing as best as they are doing it. You know, also, you know, one of the other things you can do is also let the students know when we feel like we're center stage or we're on show, you know, having to speak, that we can also highlight to them that the students are actually concentrating on their own work as well. And they are also just as preoccupied with how they're coming across when they're saying it.
So true. It's so true.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, some of the other things we can do is actually start talking to the school a little bit. A lot more communication with the school to say, you know, my child is a bit concerned about being on the webcam for this extended period of time. Is it possible for us to do something where they log in for registration and then they log off, or that they have certain parts of the sessions that they're live and certain parts where they aren't? Is there ways that they can communicate with the teacher, you know, whether that's through private chat chat room, or whether that's raising their hand in a way that's not, you know, a shout out kind of a thing, so that they can actually communicate with the school and the school is aware of what's going on as well. Certain things, you know, will start to build the child's confidence in doing it in a staged way, so that they start to go slowly and then they start to go a little bigger, you know, with the amount of time that they're on the Zoom. Role playing is also really important. So visualizing, you know, what do you think it's like to be on the webcam, and what if you felt a little differently about it? Can you visualize what that feels like? Can we talk about that? And then how do we, you know, start to get our children to start to feel a little bit more relaxed? Once they do role play a little bit with you, they start to feel like, oh, okay, it's just an emotion, and I can work on that emotion. And it's a thought that I can, you know, I can start to process and start to take it away.
What about children who have got, you know, extreme acute and diagnosable anxiety? And I'm not just talking about Zoom here, but, you know, in life, and, you know, webcam and distance learning might just be acting as a catalyst for parents to realise that. What would be the first step in terms of getting them some help? Where do you go, and what can treatment look like?
So CBT is very good for that. CBT really does help the teenagers go through and being able to process it. It also allows the child to sit back and to say, okay, you know, to kind of rate it on a scale. And when they start to see the numbers go down through exposure exercises or through, you know, being a part of it and talking through it, they start to see that they have a lot of control over their emotion and what they're feeling and how they can work through feelings and emotions of anxiety.
Thank you so much for your time, Tanya. It's really useful, to be honest, for us as adults. I think a lot of us can take those tips to heart.
Oh, absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely.
You can be found at Priory. So thank you for anyone who is needing a bit of help, a bit of one-on-one for their specific situation. Do reach out.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Thanks for downloading the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, rate and subscribe, 5 stars, please. It helps other people find us, boost us in the ratings. It means you get the podcast direct to your phone. And you can find me, Helen Farmer, live on Dubai Eye 103.8 every single weekday. That's Sunday to Thursday between 2 and 5.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.